high-tech buzzers. As always, we hope you're healthy and safe amidst this continued global pandemic and during this particularly chilly time in the U.S.-China relationship. Our thoughts go out to those of you who have been personally affected, as many of our friends have. Please stay well and take care of yourselves. Meanwhile, in line with our summer of experimental episodes, today's segment consists of a lightly edited version of a webinar that we hosted last month, which we had originally curated for investors only, but actually left open to all audiences. In it, we have speaker Mu Chen, the CEO of data intelligence firm Big One Lab, sharing some of his thoughtful analysis around data on digital and consumption trends in China post-COVID. Well, as post-COVID as it gets these days, with the risk of new outbreaks at any given time. Have a listen and send us your feedback.
That's right. Please write to us at rui@techbuzzchina.com or ying@techbuzzchina.com and let us know what you think. Note that all of these recent episodes, including any sections that we edit out, which is sometimes a lot, can also be found on YouTube. And at our website above, you can sign up to be on our mailing list, subscribe to our paid Extra Buzz newsletter, or just generally keep tabs on our ventures beyond podcasting.
For example, as you may know, we're working on an ebook on the most talked about Chinese internet company this year, ByteDance, owner of TikTok. In addition to our regular Extra Buzz newsletter installments, we've actually been publishing regular content on the company, including translations of CEO Zhang Yiming's interviews, and most recently, a presentation from Kelly Zhang Nan, ByteDance's China CEO, on how Douyin, aka TikTok in China, got started. It's a really interesting story. I mean, did you know that early creators helped co-create features and campaigns that made the app successful? Read these gems and our commentary on them by signing up for our weekly newsletter.
Absolutely, go do that. But for now, are you ready to hear about how China's economic recovery has gone? We'll cover sectors such as delivery, recruitment, logistics, travel, online spending, and gaming. Let's go.
The president's key economic team goes to China.
After whole night banking, I say I still want to do it.
Hi everyone, we are TechBuzz China by Pan Daily, powered by the Seneca Podcast Network by SubChina. We are a bi-weekly podcast focused on giving you a peek into what's buzzing within the tech community in China. We uncover and contextualize unique insights, perspectives, and takeaways on headline tech news that don't always make it into English language coverage, so you can be smarter about the world of China tech.
TechBuzz China is a part of pandaily.com, an English language site that tells you everything about China's innovation. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Ying Lu.
And I'm your other co-host, Ray Ma. We're a part of the Seneca Podcast Network, created by SubChina. In addition to TechBuzz, you can also find Seneca, which covers current affairs. And we're also proud to be partnered with Financial Times' Tech Scroll Asia, a newsletter on Asia tech news from one of the best publications in the business. Go to ft.com/tech-scroll-asia to sign up today.
And as always, we are still looking for more reviews on Apple Podcasts. Send either of us a screenshot of your review, and we will gift you a free 3-month subscription to our Extra Buzz newsletter. Just email me at ying@techbuzzchina.com. Several of you have already claimed this, and we love it when you do. Thanks so much.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. My name is Mu Chen. I'm the founder and the CEO of Big One Lab. Today, I'm sharing a deck of Big One Lab, which we prepare for some of our clients, actually, that starts tracking, you know, the impact of COVID-19 and post-COVID-19. Since February, And it's been, you know, it's been used or read or subscribed by many of the leading, you know, private equities and venture capitals across the globe to understand what's going on in China. So before I share the content, just some brief introduction about our firm. So we are an alternative data firm that's based in Beijing. Our goal is to build an intelligence gateway for China, as we realize there's a lack of such gateways when it comes to understanding the economic activities and the financial activities in China. So it's a little bit about our team. I used to work in the US a few years of banking, and then switch from the evil side to the bright side to startup. I joined a startup in New York called Epidata, and spent a couple years there to build product, basically data trackers of public companies listed in the US, and then provide the data to US investors. And that's when I realized, you know, data has been growing in China due to the penetration of internet into the economy. And I came back to apply certain, you know, different methodology to collect the data, you know, analyze the data, prioritize the data, and make it into a easier to digest. And most of our teams are tech people. A lot of data has been generated, different types of data. So far, we have discovered about 20 types of raw data that can be used for research and analysis. And we build our algorithm on top of those raw data and turn that into, you know, different kind of metrics in our research team. So today, we are sharing, you know, trackers or sharing data to help you shed some light into the impact of COVID-19. This has been a popular data set being subscribed by our clients, because one, it helps you understand what's going on in China, and two, actually it can be used as a reference for what would happen in the US economic-wise, especially during the initial period of the outbreak. I prepare four parts. First part is the basically Meituan versus Ele.me. This will shed light into, one, the food delivery service. Second is, you know, general consumption and local business. And second part is the job market. We are tracking, you know, the recruiting for different firms across four or five of the largest online recruiting job sites in China. Logistics and travel would speak to the underlying, you know, economic activities. And lastly, I will compare, you know, the offline consumptions versus the online consumptions. Generally, the takeaway or the observation is that things are back to, you know, interactive level is back to, I would say, 80%, 90% of pre-outbreak. However, we are seeing some structural, permanent or longer term structural impact of the outbreak in different sectors. People are buying different things. People are buying things differently. People are going online to play more games, watch more videos, and this is a structural or permanent change on their behavior. So first of all, I'm going to start with the O2O trackers. You know, this chart is based on our data that's tracking Meituan and Ele.me. Our trackers covers about 2 to 3 million restaurants and convenience stores, flower shops. So all the local businesses that are, you know, providing delivery service, actually the types of merchant are more diversified than, you know, we thought. Right. When I was in the US, I usually used mainly for food deliveries. In China, the delivery service, online delivery service, covers a broader set of businesses. From the 2 to 3 million data points that we tracked on a bi-monthly basis or half, we can see, you know, who are open, who are providing services. And because we have a merchant by merchant data points, we can cut it into different tier of cities. So general trend we see here is that during the outbreak, for it takes about a month and a half, businesses were shut down to about 10 to 20% of the local business. So the merchants and the restaurants have, you know, shut down or take themselves off from online deliveries. And then slowly recover. It takes about a month and a half to recover to a 70 to 80% level. And it plateaued. The takeaway here is that we saw 20% of the restaurants, same stores, actually have shut down permanently during the pandemic. So that's the first, you know, structural changes. This outbreak actually has, you know, tested the strength resilience of these stores and basically, you know, washed out a lot of stores. And we actually saw that another 20%, 30% of the new stores have joined the platform. So net, actually more businesses are doing delivery. So one like running online deliveries nowadays post outbreak. And this is another, you know, slide showing the landscape, you know, between all the competition dynamics between Ele.me and Meituan. Generally, Ele.me has strength in the coastal area as well as select provinces like Heilongjiang, the blue areas, the more shared Ele.me has, and more yellow or orange is the more share for Meituan. Market shares has fluctuated during the COVID-19, but Meituan has actually gained 1% of market share during the outbreak. That's mainly because, you know, Meituan has a broader penetration, you know, across the different tier of city. It may have gained shares in the tier of city, the types of city that Ele.me is weaker. So generally, the takeaway for this part is that there's a structural change in the, I would say, local business. We didn't show that later slides, but basically 20% of the local store has been, I would say, washed up. And actually, additional 30% are forced, were forced, maybe were forced to get on the online deliveries. And my personal experience is that some of the restaurants that I like that are, you know, more high-end were not doing deliveries because they don't want to or they don't have to. But during the outbreak, they were forced to get on it. Now I can, you know, order foods or delivery from those high-end restaurants. So that represents an additional 30% restaurant that were never on the platform. And they now join the platform. So we may observe that structural change where, you know, O2O or online deliveries increase penetration into local business. We may observe that, you know, in the US as well. And in terms of job markets, it's a good indicator of the entire economic health. It basically gives you a kind of a time series tracking of what's going on economic-wise, in terms of time series tracking of the economic activities during the outbreak on a very high-level point of view. So this chart will show the time series for, you know, job recruiting, new job postings in some of the main provinces in China, Guangdong, Hubei, Jiangsu, Shandong, and Zhejiang, as well as benchmarking them against nationwide level. You can see that actually most of the, you know, Guangdong and Jiangsu, some Shandong, the manufacturer, big provinces, back to their recruiting level, are back to, you know, pre-outbreak level. So things are actually recovering, the economic activity, the manufacturing activity. It's manufacturers and employers are expecting a recovering and healthy recovery post the outbreak. So it actually shows a sentiment for a strong sentiment or confidence from the employers. And if we break down by industry, again, this is a good indicator for employer sentiments, right? We can see that hospitalities, you know, hotels, tourist agencies, travel agencies, they are hiring less. They are recruiting activities have not recovered back to, you know, pre-COVID level. and the industrial manufacture, which is a core for China's economic activities, is one of the few sectors that have fully recovered in terms of recruiting and in terms of employer sentiment. Most of sectors are back to about 80% level in terms of recruiting numbers. And so that's a healthy, indicators. Next one, we'll look at the logistic and travel. Logistic basically is a good indicator for, I would say, the employer sentiment, kind of the supply side measurement. And the partial volume or logistic is kind of the transaction side or the demand side indicator. We actually are glad to see that, even though during the COVID-19 outbreak, partials volumes were down by almost 90%, but we see a V-shaped recovery in terms of the partial volume, now rebounded to around 90% during April, and we're back to normal actually after the 618 shopping festivals. Right, 618 is kind of the Black Friday, one of the Black Fridays. We actually have two Black Fridays. One is the Double 11, one is the 618. And it actually led to a recovery of the consumers' activities. Another, that indicator we're tracking is travel. It's been very much impacted by the outbreak. We can see that, international travels and domestic international travels for China from China, and that's indicated by our outbound and domestic bound flights tracking. And you can see domestics has recovered to a 50% level, but international, so outbound international flights are still at low percentage compared to pre-COVID-19. People are not traveling. Another indicator is Macau. Usually when outbound traveling are growing, Macau and Hong Kong, of course, are one of the few first destinations for overseas traveling. You see that Macau is still very flat and low in terms of their business visit count. So here, I would like to highlight how we get the data, right? So the flight trackings, we got it from public app and web, where we can see the seat map for different flights, and our system will go on to the app or the website to track the seat map, how many seats have been taken right before the flight has taken off, right? And then we calculate the occupancy rate. For Macau, we are using GPS trackers, GPS data, to count the foot traffic in and out from all the casinos in Macau. That's a technology that has been developed by the map providers like Baidu Maps, Gaode Maps, Tencent Maps, as well as third-party data tracking like Talking Data. They also track minutes by minute GPS location of different mobile devices, and we use that to proxy the foot traffic or the location of different individuals.
A quick note here for our audience on the podcast. Mu, you were introduced to us by Min Dai, who is currently the Alliance Director at Talking Data, and we're really grateful. He had mentioned that you work together closely, and he'd planned to be with us on this call tonight, but the Talking Data exec team is traveling in Wuhan on urgent business. They're following a recent uptick in demand from local governments for digital transformation and data-driven city governance, which is a relevant observation for today's topic. Anyways, Mu, please do continue. I think we're now on online consumption data.
Lastly, I'd like to share a little bit about comparing it, our data against online, offline data. Right? So here we track the online sales numbers of different products on Tmall, JD, and Taobao. And we are continuously tracking almost 100 million products, their price, their units sold, and their sales, right, for the individual products. And we're aggregating by category and by brand. So this is good indicator of the online consumption behavior for, you know, Chinese consumers. And by observing the, we call it GMV by category, it gives us a lot of insights. So first of all, on a high level, we can see that online consumptions has recovered back to, you know, normal level, right? You can see on the purple line, that's the year-on-year growth of gross merchandise volume, GMVs, for online consumptions. Actually, the growth has, you know, exceeded last year's level. That means online consumptions are growing despite the outbreak, which, you know, it's not surprising. Basically, actually, it confirms our hypothesis that now, due to the, you know, social distancing and lockdown policies, people have to, and they are buying more online, and actually boosted the growth of online e-commerce. But what are driving the growth? Are people just buying the same thing more, or they are buying different things? That's where our, you know, consumption data, our category data come into play, right? So we break down our data by the GMV data by category and see, you know, their trends. And here the general takeaway is that despite, you know, the rapid growth for online e-commerce purchase, actually different category has different performance. Overall, a general takeaway we have is there's a structural change on consumers' behavior, right? Online consumers' behavior. What we see is that food and beverage is growing at a rapid speed, and sports and health, home and decoration, home applications, and computers and office are also growing, you know, at a higher speed. However, you know, the more outdoor related consumptions are growing less. Actually, some of them are not growing, are shrinking. The takeaway is people are buying more stuff. There's a structural impact of the outbreak on consumers' behavior, right? Most of us are out of the, you know, the outbreak. We are doing our normal, you know, activities, daily activity. However, our consumer patterns are different. People are buying more in-house related stuff. They are cooking more in-house. They are, you know, actually decorating their homes. They are buying more appliances at home. And somehow social distancing has a more permanent impact, perpetual impact than we thought, right? So they are not expecting to go out as much. Clothing, jewelries are all, you know, outdoor related stuff. That's an interesting, you know, observation, and we are actually curious to see, you know, what would continue. Lastly, I'll share, you know, the more micro view of, you know, consumer behavior, right? So here is a day tracking of Haidilao, which is the largest hot pot franchise in China. It basically represents the health of offline consumptions. Many shopping malls would recruit Haidilao to open shop at their shopping mall to draw more consumer traffic. So the health of Haidilao basically it has a direct relationship to the foot traffic and the health of different shopping malls in China. We can see that the takeaway here is that, you know, on the left side is the operating number of Haidilao. So what stores are open? How many stores are opening? Have opened? We can see that it's basically back to normal. However, on the right side, which is the peak queuing index. So what that does mean is that we're tracking the highest queuing number for Haidilao on average nationwide. The number actually has not back to pre-outbreak level. Haidilao actually has opened its shop, reopened most of its shop, you know, in May, April, but the queuing index has not yet recovered. That's a general observation, is that local business, as we can see, employers are hiring, are expecting a normal business, a normal recovery. However, if we see the demand side, if we see the consumer behavior side, it's not yet recover. It may not back to the normal level. Again, you know, this is just another kind of data point for the hypothesis that we found, right? One, hotels are heavily impacted by the outbreak. You know, other businesses are reopening. We can see that, you know, they are back to 70% or 80% level, but you know, we are expecting, you know, on the demand side, we have yet to see a back to normal recoveries. We believe that there may be a structural change, one on the supply side. Only 70 to 80% of the stores across different categories have survived the outbreak, right? And demand side, people's behavior have permanently changed. So how that will impact the offline business, how that will shape the physical world has not yet to be seen because the recovery of consumers' confidence and consumers' activity have been slower than the supply side. So our data will actually continue to track.
Awesome, Mu. Thank you for the presentation and for staying so on point. I want to ask you to give a little bit more background about your firm. How is it doing amidst the pandemic? And what do you think that reflects? What is demand like for data from China? Basically, how's your business going?
Sure. In the last 6 months, our business actually has doubled from last year. We are expected to basically triple or more by the end of this year. Internally, we have not actively go out and, you know, kind of grow our business. Just a lot of inbound inquiries and inbound demand. Since end of January, we are seeing many, you know, inbound demands. And every week, every day, we just sit there and there's, you know, our investor coming to us and asking us for data. Until now, still, we have like two or three inbound inquiries yesterday from major internet companies and investment funds. We believe that this is another structural change on our clients' community, on the research community, which is that, you know, people are forced to adopt a more digitalized way to running research. Basically, they are sitting at home. They cannot go out to do real research to run, you know, surveys, to count, you know, cars at Walmart. So they are forced to figure out how do I run research, right? So basically through us, they can get different information digitally. So investors, our clients, are thinking about how do I upgrade my whole research methodology and research team's framework to a more digitalized way. And we are observing that many leading institutional investors, many leading internet companies are building what we call research 2.0, where there's a systematic approach to research rather than a very conventional, you know, desktop research. They are building a system internally to collect data, to collect news, to record expert calls, and put them together into a system, record them, and try to synthesize the information, right, more systematically rather than relying on manual, you know, PowerPoint making, Excel making. Everything is being automated and everything is being digitalized. So it's actually really beneficial for us.
All right. That was the end of our session with Mu Chen. What did you think about what he had to say? Send us your feedback.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to write us that review for your free Extra Buzz subscription. Have any questions or suggestions? Email us. We really enjoyed putting this together, as always, and we're always open to any comments or suggestions. You can find us on Twitter at ThePanDaily, at TechBuzzChina, and my personal Twitter account is now spelled YINGLU2020.
And my Twitter is spelled RUIMA. TechBuzzChina by PanDaily is powered by the Seneca Podcast Network on SubChina. PanDaily.com is an English language site that tells you everything about China's innovation. Our producers are Cai Wei Chen and Kaiser Guo. Thank you for listening.